Hi, I'm Kim Chakaneta, and this is The Comb, a BBC World Service original podcast. Each week, I comb through the continent for stories that matter. Now, this is our final episode of the season before we take a short break to work on more stories for you. A big shout out to all of you who wrote in with comments and story suggestions. I'd love for you to have a bigger say in what stories we tell in the next season. So please do keep writing in. Our email is thecomb@bbc.com.
They look down on dark-skinned ladies.
There was a time when there was no person who had dark skin tone on screens and TV in Kenya.
Younger ladies coming up would not want to be dark because nobody wants to be looked down on.
People will talk about, you know, how you have to, you know, make your skin fairer for you to be noticed when you go out after school.
In this episode, why is darker skin still seen as being less desirable?
This is The Comb.
Ye ni The Comb.
The Comb, no.
Ni The Comb.
The Comb.
I'm recording, you know that?
Yeah.
You see these levels? You see those green marks?
Yeah.
Yeah, it shows that our voice is going inside there, okay?
Oh.
Okay?
Okay.
All right.
That makes sense.
It makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to interview you. What work does your mama do?
She reports about Somalia.
What? I report about Somalia. Okay. All right. Okay, let's start this.
That's all.
That's all. I only report about Somalia.
That's all I'm going to say.
Okay, mama. All right.
I'm listening in on a conversation between a mother and her daughter. The mother in question is my colleague, Mercy Juma. She is Kenyan and based in Nairobi. And while she definitely does report on Somalia, she also covers the rest of the continent for radio and TV. Mercy is one of the busiest reporters I know.
So I do a little bit of everything as a journalist. So you'll find me one day I'm covering the politics in the region. The other day I'm looking at climate change. For the last few months, I've really, really been into climate change, especially because in the Eastern Horn of Africa, currently we are going through a really, really hard time with the droughts. So yes, that's what I do.
So Mercy, I know that your focus tends to be on quite big political stories, but today I brought you on to talk about a story that is both political but also deeply personal. Now, a couple of months ago we were having lunch and you told my producer Mary and me about some comments your daughter had made that had taken you by surprise. Before we get to those comments, can you just tell me a little bit about your daughter? What is she like?
My daughter is 5. With a personality and mind of a 35-year-old.
My favorite hobbies are gardening, but the most favorite thing of my hobby is cleaning up the dishes.
Oh, wow. You love cleaning up the dishes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mama. So gardening. She's very outgoing, very outspoken. She's the kind of child who will tell you exactly what she feels. If you wrong her, she will tell you, Mama, I'm not happy. If she is wrong, she will say, I'm sorry. She's very intelligent, very outgoing, and just an awesome, awesome girl who's growing up into a beautiful young lady. I'm so proud to be her mom.
As you can probably hear, Mercy's daughter is bubbly, confident, and incredibly cute. So you can imagine Mercy's surprise when one day she came to her with this observation.
One day she just woke up and she tells me, Mommy, I want to be like Elsa, you know, from Frozen. I want Elsa's hair and, you know, I just want to look like Elsa. And I'm like, oh, wow, why do you want to look like Elsa? And then because I think Elsa is beautiful.
Who is Elsa and what does she look like?
Elsa! Wake up!
Elsa is a character from Frozen, the movie.
Frozen is a phenomenally popular Disney movie. In it, Elsa plays a plucky princess.
Elsa has, you know, really long blonde hair. And she's white, actually, but my daughter thinks she's peach. So my daughter has, just like me, she has really beautiful, you know, dark skin. So she's the complete opposite of what me and my daughter and you, Kim, look like.
And there was something else, too. Mercy's daughter told her about someone she comes into contact with from time to time, who only compliments people who look a certain way.
She says, "Hi, beautiful," to the people who look like Elsa.
How did you react, Mercy, when she said that to you?
I had so many questions, first of all, and I was a little bit shocked. Every day I make it a point to just appreciate my child and how she looks like and remind her every day and affirm her that she's really beautiful, she's brilliant, she's gorgeous, and I just love everything about her. So the dad and I have made that a point that we always do that. So this took me, you know, by surprise, but it got me wondering, so which voice is this she's been listening to, or what has somebody said to her about her skin tone or her hair that would make her want to, you know, look like Elsa? So many questions. We live at a time when we're talking about embracing our skin and our skin tone and our hair, and, you know, hashtag black skin and hashtag, you know, melanin popping, black is beautiful. But that's social media. It got me really thinking, is that really reflecting, you know, the thoughts that are, you know, in our daily occurrences and our daily encounters? Yeah.
For the past decade, it's felt like there's been real momentum when it comes to embracing and celebrating darker skin tones. It's not just posts and hashtags on social media. It's governments in Kenya, Tanzania, South Africa and Rwanda banning skin lightening products. It's more darker skin models on magazine covers. All this seems to be changing. But what's less clear is if people's attitudes are also changing. It's been some time since Mercy's daughter had said those comments. So early one evening in May, Mercy sat down with her to hear whether she still felt the same way.
Mama, can you describe yourself?
I'll describe myself that I have a red dress and a flower on top of my head.
What does the word beautiful mean to you?
It means to me that you look pretty. And fabulous. And that's it. That's what I was going to say.
All right. Who are the people that you think are beautiful?
You.
Oh, wow. You think I'm beautiful?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
With makeup.
What about without makeup?
Without makeup, it's still okay.
It's still okay.
Uh-huh.
So what do you love the most about the way you look?
I like about my eyebrows because they're really straight.
Oh, you love your straight eyebrows.
And my eyelashes. And my mouth.
Oh, yeah. You have pretty lips. What else?
And my happy face.
Your skin tone and the color of your skin. What do you think about the color of your skin?
It looks great.
It looks great.
Mama, why do I have brown skin in the back and light skin over here?
On your palms? Because that's...
And on my fingers.
Because that's how God created you.
I thought it could be pink, but I know I love pink.
So you wanted your skin to be pink? Why, Mama?
I love pink, Mama.
Okay, but...
I still love the way I look.
You love the way you look?
I still love it.
Okay, that's encouraging to hear. Now, let's talk about the color pink and all the things you mentioned. Mama, have you ever wanted your skin to be different? Okay, tell me about it.
I wanted to be color peach.
Peach.
I didn't want to be brown.
You didn't want to be brown?
I wanted to be this color.
The color of your palms? Oh, wow. Why? Why did you want to be color peach or the color of your palms?
Because... Because those are my colors.
Because those are your colors.
Because those are my favorite colors.
Tell me, why do you want to have peach a skin, Mama?
Because I love color peach, so I thought God could make me color peach.
When I was a kid, I went through a phase where I really wanted two things. To have hair like my Cindy doll. Cindy was sort of like Barbie's brunette rival. I also wanted to change my name to Christine. And thinking back to that made me wonder how much of what Mercy's daughter was saying reflected a real desire to be a different skin color versus a child's ever-shifting wishes?
Oh no, Kim, this was a very, very big point and a big issue for me. Because as much as we can say that it's just a kid wanting to be like Elsa, I cannot deny the fact that we live in a world where up to today, Kim, people who are fairer skinned are thought to be more advantaged. And I've actually witnessed this. They get an upper hand in some things. They are thought to be more beautiful than people who are dark skinned. So while it's easy to dismiss it and say it's just a kid who wants to be like, you know, the person she watches on TV, I felt like if it's not dealt with, then this is what grows up when she's a teenager or when she's an adult, a lady, then she gets to, you know, still believe the voices that will tell her, oh, your friend or your colleague who is fairer skin definitely is more beautiful than you, or that your skin is not as pretty as the fairer skin, the white skin.
When Mercy's daughter made those comments, it made Mercy think back to her own upbringing. She grew up in a large and close-knit family where she was loved and valued.
I come from a Christian family, and you know, the concept of being made in God's own image and likeness was always the mantra of the day. And my mom would be like, you're really beautiful, you have nice hair, and she would tell that to my sisters and I, and I think that.
But at the all-girls boarding school she attended, the messaging was starkly different. There, Mercy quickly learned about the prizing of lighter skin over dark. Colorism.
The references about our skin color was always made. It was a norm in school. So one day we went for an outing and then we took a photo. And then we came back to class and somebody made a comment in class and she's like, oh, X is there. She's gorgeous. Look at her. Like in your whole team, you only have one person who's beautiful, you know?
So the person was just saying that your whole team, there's only one person who is beautiful because that person was lighter skinned.
Yes, because that person was light skinned and, you know, the rest of us were dark-skinned.
Moments like these played out over and over again. A steady stream of slights and comments to her and other darker-skinned girls.
And it was actually really worse if you were dark-skinned and then you had teenage acne. It just made everything really, really, really bad for you. So it was always said as classmates and all that, and there was that perception, and subtly or subconsciously, you know, you accept how you look and you believe that the other person is definitely better and fairer than you in every aspect of life. Among the circles of girls, people would talk about, you know, how you have to, you know, make your skin fairer for you to be noticed when we go out after school, when we are into seeking employment and all that.
Mercy says when she eventually began working in media, it wasn't easy at first to find anyone who looked like her on screen.
There was a time when there was no person who had dark skin tone on screens in TV in Kenya. It's only the last few years where we see a few people who are of my skin tone that are on local TV stations here. When I started working, it was unheard of. It was very rare.
And so early on, even at school, people made choices.
I went to school with people who unfortunately used also creams to make their skin fairer, and this was in university.
Mercy sees a straight line, a direct connection between her daughter's comments and people choosing to lighten their skin.
There's a connection because, you know, in my mind I'm thinking, these people buying these creams, they were once little children who just grew up in a society where definitely the Elsas are thought to be more beautiful. Opportunities are given to people who are of a fairer skin. That led them to where they are. So
Mercy says if there's a place that highlights how deeply entrenched the preference for lighter skin still is, it's in a dense maze of shops located in Nairobi's central business district. There you can buy many things, cheap electronics, hair, clothes, and lighter skin.
And Mercy, you visited one afternoon to see how easy it is to buy these skin lightening products. What happened when you got there?
Several women called me. And they're like, hi, auntie, come, let's give you some oil. Come, I'm selling some oil. Are you looking for some oil? So I walk and At first, I'm afraid actually to do this. And then, yeah, I gather courage and ask one lady who, you know, very fair-skinned lady, and she likes, oh, yes, I sell this, and then leads me up a couple of stairs. Through all these floors, actually, there are stalls and shops. All of them are selling, you know, these alls. She leads me to one of the shops. That's where she works.
The sale of these creams and oils is illegal because the ingredients contained in some of them include mercury and hydroquinone, which can have a toxic effect on the nervous, digestive, and immune systems, and on the lungs, kidneys, skin, and eyes too. And because a journalist with a recorder would likely make people nervous, Mercy secretly recorded her purchase.
And then, you know, she mixes some stuff for me.
Okay.
So you mix here and have to pay for it. And she's really convincing. Let me tell you, Kim. She talks to you and tells you how she uses these oils and it's the best and there's no side effects. And you know, if you just want to look appealing, like, that's the best thing to do.
Akuna cheaper. What do you mean cheaper, expensive?
And Kim, it doesn't smell nice, trust me.
What does it smell of, Mercy?
It's a slightly pungent smell. I cringed actually when she finished mixing it and she's like, okay, let's test it on your body. And I have to extend my hand for her to test it on my wrist. And I can't say no because I've come to buy it. But the smell was terrible. I go back into the car and our driver from the office was like, what the hell? Like,
was business good that day?
Oh yes, business was good, Kim. Business was really good because I would say I was there for about 20 minutes because I tried to negotiate to, you know, look like I really wanted to buy this. And for that 20 minutes, I saw dozens of people coming in. Some had already, you know, they make calls, so you just come and get your order, it's ready. Others would come in and ask, first-timers like me. And to be honest, in 20 minutes, I saw, because there are several sales ladies, I saw more than 20 people. And you know, I think the saddest bit for me was there were women as old as my mother. They looked to be in their 60s, 70s. Most of them were women. I saw only one man, but the rest of the customers were all women.
All in all, it took Mercy about 20 minutes and cost her around $20. The global trade in skin lighteners is estimated to reach $31.2 billion by 2024. The history of skin lighteners is a long one that stretches all the way back to ancient Egypt and Rome. Back then, people would use chalk or lead to whiten their skin, as paler skin was valued. In the 16th century, wealthy Europeans would use a treatment called Venetian ceruse to get porcelain-white complexions. But because it contained lead, they'll also end up with discoloured skin, really bad teeth, and extensive hair loss, all in pursuit of the class and status that came with pale skin. With colonization, the notion that darker skin was inferior was continually reinforced. Light skin meant proximity to whiteness and therefore access to the privileges that came with that. And those beliefs continued long after flags of independence were raised. I spoke to a lady in Ghana who told me that at her school, when they misbehaved, the darker skinned girls would be hit on the backs of their legs with a stick. The lighter skinned girls would only be hit on the palms of their hands, because of the unspoken belief that their skin was somehow more delicate. And perhaps much more disturbingly, there have been more reports of women in Ghana taking skin lightening pills while pregnant in the hope that their children will be light-skinned. I want to introduce you to someone who thought she was just buying a cream to treat her acne scars, but instead ended up trapped in a skin-bleaching nightmare.
My name is Ellen Atsuloma. I'm 30 years old. I live in Lagos, Nigeria. I'm a registered nurse by profession.
This is how Ellen would describe her skin.
Beautiful, dark, very rich, glowing, healthy, basically.
But Ellen didn't always feel this way about her skin. In fact, for many years, she had a really fraught relationship with it, which started when she was a teenager.
During puberty, I had a lot of breakouts, acne, pimples. So it affected my confidence because I was like, why do I look like this? What is happening to my skin? What's going on with my skin? So I tried looking for remedies on how to clear them out.
Ellen tried different things to get rid of her acne scars, but nothing was really working. One cream left her with some strange white patches. Then someone suggested a particular product, which was quite popular.
So I got this product and I noticed in a very short period of time my body was light. Like the entire body, the face, the head, the neck, everywhere was getting lighter. Like I was light.
And how much lighter did you get? So how dramatic was the change?
Oh, about 2 shades lighter. Like I mean, I was really light. Everybody noticed that kind of light. Very light.
What did you think of it when it was happening, when you were having this dramatic transformation?
I felt I was glowing. I was like, wow, what is this color? Like, I felt beautiful. I felt my skin was smooth, spotless. I felt fair. People were complimenting me. They loved the color. I was just about entering university. So I felt good with myself. Like, woo, I'm arriving. So I'm entering uni with this color. A lot of people loved it. People were like, what are you using on your skin? I want this product. Where do I get it from?
Although she wasn't really sure what was in the cream, she loved the effect it was having. Prior to using this cream, Ellen wasn't someone who had given much thought to being lighter skinned. But now it was happening. She loved the transformation. But not everyone was into it. Her mother, who's dark-skinned and proud, had questions.
She was like, what is going on, Ellen? Why are you looking like this? I was like, nah, mommy, don't worry. I just use one wash for my pimples. It's going to go. It's just a phase. Don't worry yourself. Like, mommy, don't bother, because my mommy can worry. So I just told her, don't worry. It will go. It's just a phase. I had no idea what bleaching was. Nothing. I just felt the cream brought out my real skin tone. Like my skin tone was underneath all this blackness. I felt the sun was the one that made me black. Because that's what they would say. Say, wow, this cream is bringing out your color. It's bringing out your color, which is not true.
The more Ellen used the cream, the lighter she became.
I remember I saw a picture of my brother and I during that period. And I saw the contrast was so much. I didn't even realize how fair I was until I saw somebody to compare with, someone I knew to compare with. So the contrast was just so much. I was like, what is going on? You need to check what you're using. Whatever it is you're using is something else.
And so Ellen stopped, or at least she tried to. But not long after she did,
my face was just a mess. I had a lot of breakouts. I had hyperpigmentation, discolorations on my face, dark circles around my eyes. I had dark patches by the side of my face. My lips were darker than my body. My knuckles were dark. It was just a whole mess. And I noticed another thing. I'm hairy though, but like this cream got me growing hair in unexpected places, in weird places. Like I was like, please, why is hair growing in this area? I started having mustache, like some beard hair started coming out the side of my face, especially those places that were dark.
And all of this could not have come at a worse time for Ellen. She was now at university.
A lot of my coursemates were like, ah, your face is rough, you need to do something about it. So one day, one of my coursemates walked towards me. She was like, ah, your face is showing, why is your face showing 2 colors? Because that's what they call it then, 2 colors. She was not like, your face should not look like this. Don't worry, I'm going to help you. I'm going to get you some products you will use for this side of your face.
Help came in the form of free products. Products the classmate vouched for.
I was fairer, and you know, I used it all over my body, so I loved my skin. But as soon as I stopped, oh my goodness, as soon as I stopped using this product, few days after stopping this product, my face just went back to ground zero. Like the dark patches were just darker. The skin beside my face was just so black. My under eye circles were black. In fact, it was not even under eye again, it was all around my eye. I looked like a panda. You know how pandas are, the face of panda, that's how I looked like, just like a panda.
Having realized that the products she'd been using were bleaching her skin, Ellen tried a different approach. This time she went online, where there is a booming marketplace of skincare, much of it purporting to be organic or all natural. This time she bought from a vendor who was selling organic skin products. But yet again, Ellen found her skin getting lighter. And when she tried to stop, her skin reacted badly. And so she contacted the lady who had sold her what she thought were organic products.
Yeah, I was like, what is going on? Why do I look like this? I just stopped using your product a few days ago. So why do I look like this? She laughed. My dear, you are now on high maintenance. You cannot stop. I was like, what? I can't stop. Why? Why can't I stop? I want to stop. I'm done. I look okay. I like the way I look now. I want to stop. She was like, you can't stop or you have to continue. I was basically trapped in this thing. My skin is addicted to it, that when I stop, I will react to it. It will break out. So it was a mess. I cannot stop. I have to continue. Whenever I try to stop, something will come up. I'll have to get another product to help me clear that stuff. So it was like I was in a cycle. I was trapped in my own skin.
And for years, this was where Ellen says she was, trapped in a constant cycle of buying one product to mitigate the consequences of the other. What eventually forced her to give up these creams was seeing two photos side by side.
I was shocked at what I saw. I noticed the picture of me way back. This was a period where I was not bleaching. I was dark. I looked younger. My skin looked healthy, plum, black. While the picture of the present, that time when I was bleaching, my skin looked stressed, like it has gone through hell. I looked 10 years older. I looked like the mother of the person in the other picture, basically. Like the difference was clear. I merged those two pictures and I compared them. I was like, no, I have to. I loved my dark self. I said, I have to get back to this. I have to get back. It was just, I just wanted to get back to being dark.
I came across some figures from the World Health Organization from back in 2011. They estimated that 77% of women in Nigeria bleach their skin. This was followed by 59% in Togo and 35% in South Africa. These figures are a decade old now. But judging not only from the booming business Mercy saw in Nairobi, but also from Ellen's experiences, it doesn't seem like that much has changed.
It took me about two years to repair my skin. I knew I was going to go through a journey and I was ready for it because I've been through it before. So I knew I'm going to have side effects because it comes with side effects. You have a transitioning phase where you have a lot of side effects. I just had to be determined and told myself, see, Ellen, you have a journey, you have a goal, and you have to work towards it. Although it took a while, but I'm so happy I crossed that bridge, basically, because now I'm a free person. I'm a free girl. The worst case is over, basically. I'm happy now, and it's just the best decision I've ever made for my skin and for myself.
For most of her life, Mercy has had to deal with the way the world views darker skin. And it frustrates her that the age-old biases remain.
It's an unfortunate discussion because it's the same discussion that my parents had with me. And it's just disturbing that I have to have the same conversation, the same discussion with my child. But do I have an option? I don't have an option because I have to arm her. I have to prepare her to go into a world where she will know people will come at her, jabs will be thrown at her. People will think she's not beautiful. I think my biggest task is continue to affirm her. At least I'm doing something, and that at least I'm arming her up with something that we know. If 10, 12 years now, somebody will come and tell her, you know, you can do this to your skin, she'll be able to, you know, respond from the point of knowledge and the point of confidence and the point of just appreciating herself deeply. And I think that's really important for me.
Mercy, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Kim.
Thank thank you for listening to this episode of The Comb. You can find us on online at
hashtag
The Comb.
Okay, good job. Let's try again.
As I mentioned earlier, we are taking a break to work on more episodes. And while we're away, there are ways for us to stay connected. You can join The Comb Facebook group. I'll be keeping you posted on what we're working on, and it's also a chance to meet other combers. And while we're on break, it will be a great time to catch up on our older episodes. We have about 70 episodes, so plenty of listening to keep you busy until we are back. This episode was produced by me, Kim Chakanetsa, Mercy Juma, and Mary Goodhart. Our sound design is by Frank McQueenie. Pierce Lynch is our editor. Our studio manager is Adrian Bogava. And an extra special thanks to Mercy's daughter for her help with this episode.